Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How are you? How was your Christmas?
That's like,
it's like a million years since I last talked to you.
I know. That's like the time warp machine. My holidays have been wonderful. Thank you. How about yours?
They've been really nice. Very, very quiet and low key. I'm finally feeling like I'm on the upswing of this cold that I've had for over 2 weeks. And I think that, like, I just really needed that quiet time of, like, the most exciting thing we've done is go for a hike, right? Like, and head out to the department store to return some clothes that didn't fit. Like, those were the major outings. And I just really needed it. I just really needed that, like, complete, you know, recharge. And I'm looking forward to a few more days like that.
Cool. Yeah, so... We did a bunch of stuff, but it's all been low-key quality time together, which has been really nice because I felt quite a deficit after the tour and being away from the kids for so long. So we've just done a lot of board game playing, and we went to Great Wolf Lodge, and we went to Matt's dad's house, which is in the Shenandoah of Virginia. It's really nice. And then tonight we just adopted a kitten. Because evidently it's contagious.
Oh my goodness.
I know. So we've been talking about getting another orange tabby because I really missed the other one that we have, and they have such great temperaments. And so the opportunity to adopt one came up. And so now we have another kitten, which we kind of thought we were going to be getting another cat the same age as the Bengals. But life just comes... the way that it comes at you. So I have another paleo kitty in the house.
I don't think I'm allowed to get another cat. I think we're a two cat household.
Well, you're a two kid household, so that makes sense.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, so now we have a blonde brunette and a red hat. We have a like a white cat, an orange cat, and a brown cat now. So but we had three cats before, so it's basically going back to a couple of months ago when we had three cats, except that it's a kitten, which is a little more work. But
yeah, I mean, that was one of the things I had been putting off getting a second cat since my cat, Riley, I used to call him my old man, since he passed away actually Christmas Eve a year ago. And I'd been meaning to get a kitten because my other cat, Peanut, is so docile, and I couldn't foresee finding an adult cat as timid and docile as he is. I mean, I did eventually, took a year, but it happened. But that was why I was putting off getting a kitten, is because of how much work they are. And now you're enjoying it. So I will just try and find a way to visit you while there's some kitten cuteness, and then let you do all the actual work.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun. And I hope that the Bengals kind of adopt him as a little, rather than, you know, having fights with him or whatever. So we'll figure that out and make it happen. But in the meantime, speaking of time warps, by the time this airs, we'll be together.
That is crazy. I have this, like, I'm really looking forward to hanging out. I'm really looking forward to the tour, and I think it's going to be really, really fun. But I think in part because I've been sick for so long, and, like, not, like, bedridden sick, like, functional sick. I've still been doing all of the things that I'm supposed to do. But it's, you know, just added this, like, umbrella of to my life. There's, like, no better word other than to explain it. And so I'm kind of like, I want to be all the way better by the time I'm hopping on, what, 4 airplanes in 3 days. So I'm just like, I feel that pressure of like, I have to get better. And I'm doing all the things, thank you everyone for all of your suggestions. I am doing all of the ones that are scientifically valid. Not doing the crazy ones that have no scientific basis. I'm doing all the others. But this just, I mean, everyone I know who's had this cold, you know, my 4-year-old has also been, she got it 2 or 3 days before I did. And she, like, I think I only had to blow her nose about 4 or 5 times today. So, and did I call her 4-year-old? She's 5 now.
Oh my goodness.
I know. I'm going to have to get used to saying that. She's a 5-year-old. She would be incredibly offended if she knew that I had accidentally called her 4. But yeah, so I think like she's most of the way there. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm just 2 or 3 days behind her. But yeah, this one has just, it's a hanger on her, a hanger on her. And I was so run down from all of the travel that I did in September, October, and November that I think it was just, yeah, This is why all of the things we talk about, like the things to do, like sleep and get activity and eat a nutrient dense diet and manage stress. And this is one of the reasons why all those things are important. And sometimes it's a little bit like, do what I say, not what I do, because clearly traveling every other weekend for 3 months, not conducive to health, weirdly.
Catches up with you for sure.
So for me, I'm like, it's 3 days. And I don't think 3 days will derail me the way 7 did before. So, and I'm really excited. So for anybody who's listening and is like, where are you guys going? Because we haven't said that yet. And maybe people don't know, on Friday, the day that, non-subscribers can actually listen to our podcast. If you're a subscriber, you get it a day early. If you're a non-subscriber and you're listening to us on Friday, we are in Nashville right now. And if you live in Nashville, go to our events pages on our site. We're at, do you remember what, it's a Barnes & Noble, right? Do you remember which one it is? That'd be great to be able to share with people right now because they're so excited and they're listening to the podcast and they're like, what time? And I'm going to say 7 p.m., but I don't actually know. And they're still listening and I'm waiting for you to look up the information really, really fast for me. you're not doing it. I'm going to be
I have the information. You just got to stop talking.
Oh, all right. Okay.
January 2nd in Nashville.
Right. Friday.
Which is Friday. We'll be with Caitlin of Grassfed Girl, and it is at 7 p.m. at the Brentwood, Tennessee Barnes and Noble, I believe. That it doesn't, yes, Barnes and Noble, Brentwood. Okay. Cool Springs, it's called,
cool,
evidently.
Cool Springs, Barnes and Noble. Okay, and so then Saturday, we are going to finally be in Minneapolis. The
as
forecast
promised.
Is looking outstanding. Cold, but no blizzards, which is the important part. We can handle a little bit of cold. You know, 12 inches of snow in a morning, not so cool. And we're going to be at, I have it in front of me.
Adena
Galleria Shopping Center. Does every city have a Galleria Shopping Center, by the way?
I think there's one in all the big cities. There must be.
It's like the quintessential shopping center is a Galleria. Barnes & Noble from 2 to 4 p.m.
So Friday is an evening, 7 p.m. Saturday, Minneapolis.
Afternoon with us. Be super, super fun. And then I'm really excited about Sunday.
What did you say? Noon?
2 to 4.
Yeah.
Not 2 to 4.
Yes.
I said
2 to 4.
Afternoon with us.
Got you.
Afternoon.
Yes.
I was talking so fast, it just blah, 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 out of my mouth because I'm so excited and I talk really fast when I'm excited. It's just one of those things.
Okay. So then Sunday,
we are going.
I am going to use my passport for the very first time ever.
I'm so excited. You're going to spend 6 whole hours outside of the country.
It's going to be so fantastic.
We are going to Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and we're going to be right downtown at the Bay Blur Indigo. So that's like right by a subway stop. You guys can hop on TTC and go find us. And you can always take the train or the bus, show up at Union Station. We're super, super easy to get to. I'm just making it really easy for all the people who have said, I live in Kingston. How am I going to get there? I live in Peterborough. I think I might try. I'm super excited at the number of people who've commented of how far they're coming from southwestern Ontario to downtown Toronto to meet us Sunday afternoon. So that's awesome, eh? I just threw in the A there. Just be like,
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to your Canada coming out.
I think 6 hours is maybe not enough for me to go full hog Canadian on you. But I used to live downtown Toronto, so I used to live only a couple miles. I mean kilometers from Bay and Bloor. I used to live, for our Toronto listeners, I used to live in the City Place condos back when there were only five of them. Just saying, it was a long time ago. There was only five of them. And so that's my neighborhood. I'm just so excited, even though it's only going to be a couple of hours. We're going to see some of my family and, we're going to hang out in my old hood. It's awesome. And what's really interesting is I've had this feeling of grief that we only get to be there for 6 hours. So I've actually started planning a personal trip for later in the spring. And I'm going to go with just my youngest daughter. We're actually going to go really hang out with friends and family. And sorry, fans, probably not do a book signing because I'll be traveling with a 5-year-old. But yeah, it's been I have this super excitement about going back to a city I really, really loved. I loved living there. And then not spending enough time. So I'm like, well, I know how to fix that. Go back and spend more time. If you're free and we're only 2 hours away, then I encourage you to figure out how to come see us if you want to come see us. If you don't want to come see us, that's fine. You're totally allowed to not care at all.
In Canada, I'm super excited for you to teach me all about your country when I'm there. That I'm terrible about geography.
6 hours will be totally enough time to teach you all about
Canada. All about the culture. All about the whole country.
I'm going to show you all of the public higher institutions, higher educational institutions, and doctor's offices and hospitals that you get to actually just go to when you're sick. That will be my big plan, is to show you how awesome socialism is. That's it right there. And then I might explain the parliamentary system of government and say a lot. We will not be getting hot dogs at hot dog stands.
Oh my.
That would be the other quintessential Toronto thing to do.
Sorry. We have a lot of hot dog stands here in Washington, so.
I'm just saying the gluten contamination may be a problem.
Yeah, I understand.
Exactly.
Okay. Before I forget, for those of you who are either subscribers or non-subscribers, so you have 2 to 3 days left if you wanted to or meant to get in on the Family Resolution Revolution bundle to still do that. Sarah and I have both posted about it. You can find it anywhere basically on either of our sites or Google or whatever. But we both
familyresolutionrevolution.com.
Yes. Yes. We each have our own ebooks in this bundle, and it is something that we are each genuinely believing is a good deal, especially if you're interested in learning more or changing your health or your habits in the near future. These are resources that come down to 97 cents a piece when you buy them all together, and you get discounts from a lot of the favorite vendors in the community. So if you're already buying from these people, or if you already intended to make a purchase, the bundle could even pay for itself with just those discounts. So check it out. Your last reminder. It's awesome.
Yeah. And Sunday. And people are really excited about it. I think I'm going to blow your horn for you. You've done a really masterful job collecting a really comprehensive set of resources. And also, one of the things that I think is really, really neat about this bundle, you've called it Family Resolution Revolution, but an individual could totally find, 98% of these resources amazingly helpful and useful even if they don't have a family. But I think what's really exciting to me is how many resources are in this bundle, that this is the first time they've ever been put in a bundle. So this is the first time they've ever been offered at such a tremendous discount. And I did the calculation. It's over 95% off from if you bought everything individually. And that doesn't even include the discount codes. Like that's pretty crazy awesome. And just for the skeptics out there, as a contributor to this bundle, but not an organizer, I always like to be really transparent in terms of like my marketing and why I might do something and why I might not. What's in it for the contributors is that we get this amazing marketing to sympathetic audiences, but new people. So what we get is we get to put our books in this bundle, and this bundle is going to get bought by people who maybe aren't like, never heard of us, maybe aren't really in, don't really know about what we have to talk about, what's in our eBooks, but then they get the whole bundle and then they end up looking at, well, let me check out the Paleo Approach Dinner Club and see what that's about. And then we get a new reader, you know, and it's this access to a market where it tends to be really, really high, like conversion of people like looking at your stuff and then deciding to, you know, read more, and maybe they'll then go buy the Paleo Approach or the Paleo Approach cookbook because they've seen my ebook in this bundle. And it's because of that exposure to new markets that it's totally worth for me to donate my ebook that I'm selling for $17 into a bundle where now the entire bundle that includes 40 resources is being sold for $39. And this kind of mathematics only works when bundles are really, really well put together, which this one is. And it only works when you do it infrequently. And if you're in a bundle like every other week, like people be like, it ends up sort of diminishing the value of your work, which is not cool. And I think people could understand why we wouldn't want to do that. But that's how we all as contributors come together to donate our work that we put, you know, our books that we put tons of work into, and tons of, you know, like emotion and everything else into. That's how that comes together to into something that can be sold at such a tremendous discount. And it's also why it's so unusual to see such amazing bundles, and you won't find this type of thing offered very, very, very often. And, you know, typically I see good bundles once or twice a year. I see bundles more often than that, but you really, you know, when you're looking at ebook bundles, you really kind of have to look at what you would want, what you would normally buy, and how much that would actually cost you compared to the cost of the bundle. And this bundle is just, it's just awesome. So I think I just sold a lot more bundles, didn't I?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're like, oh, thank you. This is really awesome, Sarah. I wasn't anticipating this, which Stacey wasn't. She totally didn't know I was going to go on a like pro family resolution revolution bundle rant. Frankly, I didn't until about 2 minutes ago. But yeah, I think, you know, for me, there's this. I remember when I first saw a bundle and I was like, well, how can seriously 95%? Like, what's the catch? And there is no catch. Like, it really is the full versions of these ebooks. It's all these great resources. Now, it is fully digital. So that is like one of the things, is that you're not getting anything in paper, because if you're getting anything paper, the physical cost of that paper would raise the cost of the bundle. But the reason why we can do this is because when these bundles are really successful, it's great marketing for us. And it's I would far rather, you know, do something like this, then, you know, pay for a Facebook ad or something. Could you hear the disdain in my voice right there? I made the disdain face, and it's, yeah, like,
be careful. It can hear you.
Okay. I'm not dissing Facebook at all right now, but I kind of have this principle against paying for Facebook ads. So for me to spread the word about me, which is, you know, how I make a living, this is like, it's so win-win, because it's Typically people are really health conscious and they have an interest, but maybe, you know, don't know about my work. And so, so there's a high percentage of them that will be interested once they look at it. So it's like, it's yay. That's what it is.
It was interesting to me as the organizer seeing some of the questions come in that as a contributor I'd never seen before, and people very frequently ask, does it disappear on January 4th? And the answer is no. The answer is just that the sale can't be purchased anymore after the 4th. So,
oh yeah, like
you get these books
still
forever,
stay
like
on your computer after the 4th.
Yeah, you download them, you own them. Yeah, we can't come to your computer and take them away. Like they don't disappear. They're yours after.
Kindle can do it. Kindle's got some magic for making books disappear off your Kindle.
Well, what I do is I download it to like our home computer that we put Dropbox on, and then we can open them from any device within our Dropbox network is how we manage ebooks in our own home. So people have been asking the best way to manage it. That's what we personally do, to each their own. But if you do it that way, if you download it and, you know, there's nothing, it doesn't go away. It's your books, and there's way more than ebooks in the bundle. It's all yours. There are some expiration codes, obviously, for discounts and 1 month memberships to cooking clubs and stuff like that. That's more time sensitive once you sign up. But there is no that the ebooks are yours forever. They don't disappear. So just to answer that question, but
it's compatible on any device. That's the question I see the most. So if you can read a PDF file, you can read these ebooks. So if you've got a computer, if you've got a tablet, if you've got a smartphone, like any of those devices can, a Kindle, you know, any of those devices can read these ebooks. Just, we need to move on and do our show.
But yeah. What is our
show
today?
I want to make sure that we answer these questions. Well, okay. So it's New Year's. Like when this actually airs, it will be New Year's Day for subscribers, right? And we kind of talked last week about getting back on the wagon when you fall off the wagon, because that's sort of a, you know, seasonal topic, and something that is relevant to, I mean, even when you're not completely falling off, I think January 1st is when a lot of people start sort of tightening things up. Like even if you haven't gone like crazy haywire, you're still like, okay, well now I'm going to like really not have this or do this more, whatever it is. So, you know, we sort of talked about doing a New Year's resolution show and kind of thought, in a lot of ways that was covered last week because we really talked about getting back on the wagon. And in many ways, that's what resolutions are about, is sort of, you know, reprioritizing certain, you know, behaviors or habits so that you can be healthier. But one of the things that I think we haven't talked about a lot lately, but tends to make a lot of people's resolutions lists is weight loss. And as much as I really think it's important when we're setting resolutions to set resolutions focused on habits rather than goals. So, you know, for me, I think it's always better to set, you know, I'm going to not snack in the evening. I'm going to walk every day. I'm going to go to bed earlier. You know, and I'm going to not eat desserts. I mean, those are four habits that are going to promote weight loss. And I'm going to make those my resolutions, for example, instead of resolving to lose 20 pounds. And so, you know, because also the health benefits of those four really good habits are going to last a lot longer than reaching this weight loss goal. So I think it's always important to be really habit centered with resolutions. But at the same time, it's one of those sort of frequently asked questions for people coming into the paleo diet or who come to the paleo diet and then don't necessarily have as much success as they anticipated or that they see their peers having. And that's centered around weight loss. So I thought that, you know, rather than doing a full-blown New Year's resolution show, we could maybe break it down to this one really common New Year's resolution and talk about weight loss topic. It's a huge topic. We'll obviously get a little bit more focused, but talk about this in a little bit more detail for anybody who does have losing weight as maybe not the New Year's resolution itself, but the goal behind some of the New Year's resolutions.
Cool. Let's do it.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science
for Science with Sarah today, because we're talking about weight loss, I wanted to share a couple of the really unusual or sort of surprising facts that I've learned lately about diet and lifestyle and weight. And it's part of the reason why I've learned a lot of things lately is I've actually been going into the scientific research into obesity in quite a lot of detail lately in anticipation of a fairly epic series of blog posts that'll be up on my blog probably over the next 4 months, if not longer. And so it's been a topic that I've been deeply interested in, you know, especially because as I do really, really well managing my autoimmune disease, but not as well with the waistline that I would ideally like, it's a topic that I'm especially looking into in terms of, you know, my own self-experimentation and figuring out my own personal health, which is typically what guides the type of science that I get interested in reading. So there's been a couple of really sort of like mind-blowing facts that I have discovered lately. And I think a couple of podcast episodes ago, I talked about the dopamine response to food in people with a history of obesity or binge eating disorder being blunted. So we actually have less of a reward response when we eat compared to a healthy weight person without eating disorders. And what that ends up doing is feeding this desire to overeat. So we end up eating more because we're trying to get that dopamine response. And this really centers on the food addiction side of obesity. And in terms of like practical, what do you do about it? You know, fixing that kind of brain chemistry is not particularly straightforward, but there are some things that we know can be really, really helpful. One is increasing omega-3 fatty acid intake. That's really, really good for neurotransmitter formation, for neuron communication. One is increasing intake of tryptophan, which is the amino acid that serotonin is made out of. That is really, really rich in organ meat and seafood. And in fact, a lot of the really important amino acids for brain health and important vitamins and minerals for brain health are found in organ meat and seafood. So yet another reason to increase intake of those. Other things that are really important for brain health, mental exercise in addition to physical exercise. We know that increasing blood flow to the brain, which you can do with physical exercise, but also, you know, Sudoku, you know, for like finding, learning a new language, learning a musical instrument, crossword puzzles, reading a textbook, reading the Paleo Approach, which is a lot like a textbook. Those things can actually increase blood flow to the brain, and that can help turn off inflammation and help regulate some really important hormones. And then physical activity can do it as well, but in kind of a different way. So you kind of want to combine the benefits of both of those. And we know with physical activity, there's sort of this, for in terms of physical activity specifically for brain health, and this is different than other health metrics when it comes to physical activity, but increased heart rate. So it's just, you know, going for a walk. I mean, it doesn't have to be like crazy town, but we know that the magic happens at 30 minutes. So we know that all of a sudden at 30 minutes, you end up stimulating cell division in the hippocampus. And so it's sort of like a, you know, make sure that you get 30 minutes of exercise. And this is actually used for people with traumatic brain injury as part of their rehabilitation afterwards, is this 30-minute exercise. With something like, you know, puzzles or brain teasers or something else, there's no, as far as I'm aware, there's no like minimum amount of time that you need to do that for. My suggestion would be 10 to 15 minutes. And then on the complete flip side, turning off the brain is really, really important for regulating brain chemistry. So meditating, yoga, going for a walk, but without things, like going for a walk, but, you know, maybe have your phone in your pocket just for safety reasons, but not talking on the phone, not, you know, listening to a podcast, as much as we love it when people listen to our podcasts wherever they are. But doing something where you're just really in your own thoughts and you're really just present in your own body and your own mind, that can be incredibly good for, I mean, we say for mental health, but really what that means is regulating neurotransmitters. And in this case, it's really about neurotransmitter receptors. And you have to sort of get at it from all angles. And then the other thing is being aware that this response is affecting your ability to have portion control. And for a long, long time, we have heard that if you follow a low carb diet, you know, like if you follow the Atkins diet, like long before paleo existed, now you follow the paleo diet, you're just eating this nutrient dense food, your body will automatically tell you when to stop eating. And what this new research is showing is that may not be true even when you're eating a really nutrient dense diet. So that doesn't mean that you have to be hungry all the time, because that's, you know, not good either, because that can be a stress on the body. But really being mindful to not, you know, to eat until you're full, but not eat until you're stuffed. And I think for me personally, that's one of the things I really, really struggle with. I love the feeling of being so full I'm about to vomit. I can't really explain that other than I believe it's related to this food addiction and dopamine response. And so what I have to do is not let myself eat that much, just eat until I'm full. And it requires dedication and commitment and a lot of body awareness. And it's unfortunate, because what it really means is, like, if you have a history of obesity or binge eating disorder, it means listening to your body is not something you can do, at least not right away, when you're making these changes, because your body is a liar. And that was a really, really hard thing for me to wrap my head around as I started to get into the research. But there's some other things that have been really, really interesting to me that are not related to the mental side of overeating, but are really tied to the diet side. One of them being the relationship that soluble versus insoluble fiber have on fat metabolism. And for a long, long time, you know, there's so much research showing, you know, prebiotic soluble fibers, and you can buy all these, you know, wonderful inulin fiber to add to your food. And, you know, this is why you see so many people talking about, it's one of the major arguments for safe starches, for example, is because they're full of these wonderful soluble fiber, prebiotic fibers. And I encourage people to go to my blog and read my 5-part incredibly epic series on fiber called The Fiber Manifesto. It will completely break some of the major fiber myths out there and completely have you thinking about fiber in a different way. But one of the fiber myths is that this soluble fiber is so vitally important as a prebiotic. Insoluble fiber is fermentable. It's not as highly fermentable as soluble, but it still is food for our gut bacteria. And there's a growing body of literature showing that insoluble fiber, so that's what you get from like leafy greens, non-starchy vegetables generally, some starchier vegetables like beets and parsnips and turnips. But this insoluble fiber is actually more important for feeding the right type of bacteria, and that soluble fiber can actually by itself overfeed bacteria in the digestive tract. And so if you're over-focusing on soluble fiber, not that you need to cut it out completely, but if you're over-focusing on it, that can cause bacterial overgrowth just as much as a Western diet or standard American diet can contribute to small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and all of the health problems associated with that. So we know that insoluble fiber has some health benefits in terms of the gut microbiome, but there's some research that actually looked at it was in mice, so we take that with a grain of salt, but it was a really, really brilliantly designed study. And what they did, because so many studies looking at the health benefits of soluble fiber are short-term, so what they did is they fed two groups of mice identical diets, and they were high-fat diets that are known to make mice obese. So it was specifically this, you know, diet that's known to make mice obese. One diet had a soluble fiber in it, and the other diet had insoluble fiber. And the mice, it was calorie matched. The diets were completely identical in every other respect. And over the short term, the soluble mice were leaner and had better markers of health. They had lower triglycerides. They had lower inflammation. But over a year, which is about half the lifespan of an average mouse, like right around the 3-month mark, it switched. And all of a sudden, the soluble mice got morbidly obese, and the insoluble mice stayed lean. They had lower markers of inflammation, lower triglycerides. And these researchers actually went and measured gene expression in the liver of genes that are known to control fat metabolism and found that the excess of short chain fatty acids produced, which are generally considered to be really, really beneficial and really, really great for the health of our guts and the health of our cells, and one of the major advantages to having a healthy gut microbiome. But there was this excess of them produced in the soluble fiber diet that turned on gene expression in the liver that turned on fat storage. Whereas the mice that were fed the diet with insoluble fiber had genes that turned on fat metabolism. And so it actually is a really interesting concept to me. There's a lot of questions left unanswered. I think the most that it really shows is how important it is to focus on insoluble fiber, which is from non-starchy vegetables. And it doesn't necessarily say that you should cut out all soluble fiber. We know that there's some really detrimental effects on hormones and the immune system from going too low carb. And the idea is to lose weight in a healthy way. Like if we wanted to lose weight quickly, a ketogenic diet is really, really successful, but it also really messes up your hormones and completely suppresses your immune system and makes you more susceptible to infection and things like autoimmune disease. So there's some really, really big problems behind that. If you're using a ketogenic diet for weight loss, there's some great therapeutic value for cancer or for neurodegenerative diseases, but that's a whole separate topic. So what this may actually say is that the reason why low carbohydrate diets and ketogenic diets are so effective has nothing to do with carbohydrates, and it may be because they're also low soluble fiber diets. That's completely hypothesis and it needs to be tested, but it's a really interesting thing to think about when you're making food choices. And I think that given the huge body of literature showing the benefits of high vegetable intake and high insoluble fiber intake — insoluble fiber is more anti-inflammatory than soluble fiber. Soluble fiber can hinder fat digestion, which insoluble fiber doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of different things going into this. I think the take-home message is focus on eating large servings of, you know, leafy greens, like non-starchy vegetables, and getting that insoluble fiber. And I think that there's a lot of really potential good health effects on that we can experience. One of them may be turning on fat metabolism and turning off fat storage. And the last sort of big thing that I wanted to share in terms of obesity research that I've read recently is about the link with sleep. So I think I've talked about on this show before that, you know, not getting enough sleep increases your appetite, makes you more uninhibited with your food choices. And that's been research that's been known for a very, very long time. But there's recent research that actually shows that people with certain genetic susceptibility actually have they have a variant of the clock gene, which is the gene in our cells that actually keeps track of the circadian rhythm. So actually keeps track of daytime and nighttime. That clock is set by the light-dark cycle and by some other things to a lesser degree, like exercise and the timing that we eat and social interactions and things like that can sort of — the temperature of your environment, those types of things can feed into that system as well. But the clock gene's what our body uses to keep track of time. And it turns out that there's certain variants of the clock gene. So certain — that's a certain gene that we can inherit that makes us more susceptible to have increased appetite and some hormonal effects that turn on fat storage in response to not enough sleep. And the researchers actually showed that you could completely negate the effects of this gene on appetite by getting sufficient sleep. So there may be some of us who are more susceptible when we're not getting enough sleep to gaining weight. And I certainly know for myself that it's been the number one thing for me forever, that if I'm getting enough sleep, my weight's going down. If I'm not getting enough sleep, my weight's going up. Like that's just always been true for me. And this new research looking at the clock gene is actually showing the genetic contribution to that effect. So the summary here of these three sort of cool recent things that I've read, we're getting a 3-for-1 Science with Sarah this week, is portion control is important even on a paleo diet. So that means not restricting calories overly because you want to make sure that you're getting enough, but being mindful of energy intake, being mindful of how much you're eating and cutting it off, you know, just slightly sooner. Focusing on non-starchy vegetables, and lots of them. The great thing about those too is that they're less calorie dense. They tend to be more filling and they can actually help with that portion control. So nice link there. And then the last thing is getting lots of sleep, which also helps control your appetite and your uninhibited eating, and also is really, really good for mental health and restoring neurotransmitter and receptor balance in the brain. So it then feeds also back into food addiction. So there are three really interlinked ideas. And I think the three of which are really important keys when it comes to losing weight.
I don't know what more we could possibly add to this topic.
I have lots, but I'm going to stop now.
are we gonna answer some questions?
Let's definitely answer some questions.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So Molly says, "Hi, ladies. I am loving your podcast. I stumbled upon you a few weeks ago and have been trying to catch up with all the episodes I have missed. I've been eating a whole foods-based diet now for about 10 months. It started with a Whole30 last spring. I generally eat paleo, but not exactly 100%, although I am 100% gluten-free. But I don't feel too much if I have the occasional serving of rice or legumes, for example. I liked a recent Chris Kresser article about whether legumes are paleo and who really cares. Overall, I'm totally committed to eating real food and purchase as much organic and local food as I can. I have not noticed significant issues with some of these clean but non-paleo foods in terms of what it does to my body, i.e. bloating, gas, etc. Therefore, I tend to eat what feels good and not worry too much if it's officially classified as paleo. What I consider cheating may be the occasional gluten-free rice crackers, gluten-free pizza crust, or gluten-free alcohol. That said, my biggest concern is that I seem to be unable to lose weight on a whole foods-based diet. I definitely have weight to lose, like 40 to 50 pounds. So it's not those 5 vanity pounds I hear some crazy people being concerned about. I have been working with a local nutritionist for all these months. She is totally on board with the whole foods movement and is very up to speed on current science. I've spent quite a lot of money on different lab tests, testing for hormone levels, micronutrient deficiencies, full thyroid panels, metabolic panels, vitamin D levels, ferritin levels. I tested negative for the MTHFR gene mutation. Suffice it to say, we have been digging pretty deep to uncover what might be my roadblock. Generally speaking, the nutritionist and compounding pharmacist I have been working with keep telling me my labs are indicating I am a healthy individual. Any advice or just plain encouragement you can provide would be greatly appreciated. Thank you."
So, I mean, I have two things kind of come to mind with me on this, and I don't know, Sarah, if you have other specific things you want to talk about, but aside from all the blood work kind of stuff that she mentioned that she's doing, thyroid, all that kind of stuff, I think it goes back to the lifestyle factors and portion control that you mentioned earlier. And I can say for me personally, that is where I see myself gaining and losing. Like I fluctuate I maintain the 100 plus pounds that I lost, but beyond that, I kind of fluctuate in this 10 pound range where if I find myself drinking or eating sweets or eating more carbohydrate rich foods, especially when I'm not working out, like I easily bloat up very quickly, and it's mostly water weight that I hold on to. And I have to kind of moderate for myself, okay, these are the healthy foods, salads, soups, good quality protein, and focus on those kinds of foods. And within a couple of days, I rebuild my habits and I'm eating good foods again. And I see that, you know, 5 to 10 pounds of bloating go away pretty quickly. But it takes me to the second point, which is that for me personally, I hit a point where I actually pushed through that plateau and that's where you hear me talk about that 135 pound weight loss. That extra 20 pounds is actually not healthy for my body to lose. I lost it around my 30th birthday, and shortly thereafter had all kinds of health issues, autoimmune flare, adrenal fatigue, and was really, really micronutrient deficient. And part of that learning process for me was that I believe that my body in its current state with the current stress and current lifestyle that I live couldn't go below what I kind of had pushed through in a really low carb, small portion, intermittent fast diet. It was a starvation diet. I had basically used paleo as a starvation diet the same way that, you know, you can restrict calories and that sort of thing. And of course I lost weight because if you restrict that much, you'll lose weight. But I also started messing with my hormones. I wasn't sleeping. I dysregulated my menstrual cycle. I did all kinds of stuff that indicated that my body was not in a healthy state at that time frame. So for me, I definitely sit like 50 pounds overweight, but I know that I work out, and I know that if I focus on eating clean and all of my test results and all that kind of stuff comes out, I've just kind of resigned myself to focusing on being healthy and getting stronger. And I'm hoping that one day I'll kind of, you know, just something will click in my body and I'll have, you know, a lot of people talk about being at a plateau for a really long time. And then all of a sudden you don't do anything different and it suddenly works. I'm crossing my fingers for that to happen to me. Maybe it won't. You know, there are great things that you're doing those test results and that kind of stuff. Like, those are the two things that I would say I have kind of come to on my own about weight loss, and definitely the lifestyle factors and portion control are going to be big.
Yeah. So, you know, generally when people tell me they're not losing weight, those are the two questions that I ask. So my first question is, are you getting enough sleep? I mean, generally when I hear anybody say I'm having not success with whatever it is, I'm on the autoimmune protocol, but it's not, I'm not having this, or, you know, like whatever it is, my very first question, are you getting enough sleep? And it's really because sleep is so critical, and it's honestly easier for us to make these huge, drastic, crazy changes to our diets where we're eating, you know, such limited foods and we're cutting out our favorite things. It is easier to do that than to go to bed 2 hours earlier when we actually really need to go to bed. We have, as a society, the hardest time prioritizing sleep, but it's really, really important. So that would be the number one thing that, that I would, you know, definitely recommend looking at. Molly didn't give us any indications about how her sleep is, but that would be the number one thing that I would try to evaluate. And if you're getting enough hours, and I would say if you're trying to lose weight, 9 hours should be considered a minimum. And if you're getting those hours, then the next thing is to look at the quality of the sleep. And you can do that sort of informally with something like a Fitbit, or you could do it formally with something like a sleep study, but have a look and see if you're actually spending enough time in a deep sleep to really get that restorative, you know, sleep that helps detoxify the brain and all those great things. The next thing is portion control, but here's the thing. One of the other big things that I see with people who are not losing weight is that they're under eating. So I see overeating because, you know, they're going too nuts on nuts, or we're doing that thing that I tend to do, which is, right, eat until I'm full. I'm using air quotes again, everyone. Eat until I'm full, but I'm really actually eating until I'm so stuffed that I'm going to vomit. That's not full. That's like ridiculously over full. But I'm not good at stopping when I'm full if I'm not specifically paying attention to it. So I recommend just doing a food journal and really trying to not let it this is the thing about food journals is as soon as you start writing down what you're eating, you're going to change what you're eating. It's very much like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle of food. So, but try not to let it change what you're eating. So if you would normally grab a square of dark chocolate and then 10 minutes later, grab another square of dark chocolate and then 10 minutes later, grab another square of dark chocolate, you know, for, you know, an hour after lunch, in order to get until you get enough caffeine and then you're perky. Like write that all down and don't let food journaling stop you from doing that. But then look at what you've been eating. And what happens a lot of the time is the two extremes, right? So people either they start food journaling and they realize they're getting 900 calories a day and they had no idea their caloric intake was so low. Or they start food journaling and they realize they're actually getting in, you know, 3,000 calories a day and they had no idea their caloric intake was so high. And here's the thing, as much as it's not all about calories in and calories out, calories are still relevant. If you want to lose weight, you still need to consume an energy deficit. You don't want it to be such a huge deficit that you're going to start messing around with hormones. You don't want it to be such a huge carbohydrate deficit that you're going to start messing around with hormones. But, you know, making sure that you are at a good carbohydrate level, and probably because she has such a good healthcare professional to work with, it's probably really easy to measure her basal metabolic rate and use that as the base for how many calories she's taking in. But for most women, 1600 to 1800 is a really good target range for losing weight. And if you're active, you're adding on top of that. But you know, typical, you know, a really healthy basal metabolic rate would be 1500 to 1600 calories a day. So that's how many calories you burn being completely sedentary. And so usually if you're eating calories at around your basal metabolic rate, you're losing weight because all of the activity you do is like burning extra stored energy. And then the other thing is making sure that you've got muscle mass, right? So whatever you can do to raise your basal metabolic rate, which includes things like getting enough sleep and managing stress and not traveling every other weekend for 3 months straight. But it also includes things like, you know, doing body weight exercises, maybe lifting a few heavy things. I mean, those things are really, really important for increasing basal metabolic rate, keeping your metabolism going consistently. And then the other thing to look at with diet when you're doing that food journal is protein intake and making sure that you're getting enough protein and making sure that you're consistently having a high protein breakfast. Those are things that are also in the scientific literature have a really, really good correlation with healthy, sustainable weight loss. Because that's the other aspect, right? Like what good is it to lose those 50 pounds if then you're sick and your body can't keep it off? Or, you know, like that, the idea behind losing weight is to get healthier. So when you lose weight and you get less healthy, that's like completely counterproductive. So figuring out how to do this in a way that actually makes you healthier is really the trick.
Okay.
Should we do our next question?
Yeah.
This question is from Carmen. Dear Sarah and Stacy, first of all, let me tell you what an inspiration you and many of your guests have been to me since I found you. Unfortunately, people like us are a minority in the paleo world. I have a lot of weight to lose, 100 pounds, just like you did, and sometimes have a hard time relating to the muscle-bound athletic paleoites who are after increased performance and have never had so much weight. Don't get me wrong, I have all the respect towards anyone who has something worthy to say and find a lot of information on these skinny paleo people blogs, but you too have me believing that there is a place in this world for someone like me. I have just started paleo, but this is my second attempt at making this change permanent and 100%. The first time was about 6 months ago, and then some events in my personal life made it impossible for me, so I had to go back to eating as healthy as I could manage under the circumstances, but far from 100% paleo. Last time I managed 4 months. This time, 1 week so far, but the joint pain symptoms that I noticed last time have come back this time, so I'm trying to find a solution. My question is, since I went back to paleo, I keep having pain in my joints that was not there before. I have always heard about how paleo relieves joint pain, and I wasn't expecting this. I don't have any sort of muscle joint issues when I eat a standard American diet, but when I eat paleo, I do. Any suggestions or advice would be highly appreciated. Thanks again for all you do.
So I'm going to let you take this one, because I think it might be nightshade related, or just other inflammatory foods that are increased when you switch to paleo. But I would say that I had incredible joint pain before I was paleo, and going paleo did not make them worse for me. In fact, now that I'm eating nutrient-dense food, specifically broth, 5 times a week, I have eliminated the joint pain that I had before. So, and I mean, I'm a competitive, heavy weightlifter, strongman competitor, which there's no way I could have done if I hadn't resolved the joint pain. So it definitely can be done. And I think for me personally, it has a lot to do with food intolerance. And I just had to kind of heal and then learn when I couldn't eat and avoid those foods.
So I think you are exactly spot on, Stacey, in the sense of looking at the foods that Carmen is eating more of on a paleo diet that she's very likely sensitive to. And nightshades are the prime culprit, but they could also be too many nuts. It could also be eating a lot of chicken, which if you're not balancing that with fish intake, it's really high in omega-6. It could be any food sensitivity, but that would be the first place that I would look is foods that Carmen is eating a lot more of. And I know when I first went paleo, you know, I went paleo because of this autoimmune skin condition. And within 2 weeks of paleo, I was off 6 prescription medications and I was losing weight and I was feeling energetic and amazing. And I was seeing all of these improvements and all these health conditions. And this skin condition that was the reason why I did the research that brought me to paleo in the first place continued to get worse. And it wasn't until, you know, I'd been sort of continuing to research because I was pretty dedicated to paleo by that point because of how amazing it was for everything else, that I discovered the autoimmune protocol and started implementing it and understanding why. And it was through that process that I discovered how sensitive I am to nightshades. And I do get joint pain if I get exposed to nightshades or gluten. But the other thing I get, that causes me joint pain is a lot of sugar. So that's another one. If I find myself sliding into the paleo treats, even though they're grain-free and dairy-free and all of those great things, is that's where I'll start to get some joint pain as well. Especially I get it a lot in my feet and ankles. So that would be the number one place that I would look. And then the other place that I would look would be sleep, stress management. Those things can be really big contributors to the immune system. I don't want to tell Carmen to do the autoimmune protocol. If she's having a really hard time sticking with paleo in the first place, I feel that that's too restrictive and that's probably going to make going paleo harder. But looking at nightshades, that's tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, chili, goji berries, cayenne pepper, paprika, red pepper. Am I missing one? I feel like.
Did you say eggplant?
Eggplant.
Potato.
Potatoes. That entire family. And I think it's one of the things that happens. We start eating more meat and vegetables, and I think start cooking with tomatoes a lot more. That becomes like this really classic, first entry into paleo is really
and chili powder
tomatoes.
Because I think it's like an umami flavor that is nice to add into things. Like I see tomato paste, tomatoes, chili powder, paprika, and cayenne in so many paleo recipes. And it's not to say that those aren't legitimately tasty foods. It's just like there are so many other foods, and I think we lean on that because it tastes good and adds good flavor
and
to things.
And they're an interesting food because they have some really great nutrients in them, which is why they're considered paleo, but they also are quite inflammatory. And when people are sensitive to them, they're extremely inflammatory. And I think I've encountered a lot of people who are like me, that I react more strongly to nightshades than I do to gluten. And I recover more slowly from nightshades than I do from gluten. And so it's a pretty big deal for me to accidentally eat a tomato. And so that's a pretty major culprit. And joint pain is like this really common symptom that I hear from other people who are sensitive to nightshades. The other things that can help joint pain is actually adding things in, adding in more bone broth or gelatin-rich foods like seafood, a collagen supplement, Great Lakes collagen. You can just put it into, any glass of water or herbal tea or whatever you're drinking. that can be really, really tremendous in relieving joint pain, and high omega-3 intake. So increasing seafood intake, maybe doing a 1 month or 6 week trial of fish supplements. Those aren't really good long term, but for short term of like a month, month and a half, it can be really, really beneficial to take fish oil. And those things can be really, really helpful for joint pain as well.
Cool.
So as we end our New Year's resolution show, Stacey, do you want to share like your top three New Year's resolutions?
I only have one resolution.
Well, then just share your top one, because you can't share number two and three if you don't have them. I have like nine resolutions this year.
I know. Good for you. I am prioritizing the thing that's most important to me, which is simplifying my life. So that is manifesting itself in many different ways for, you know, what is simple for me is different from for somebody else. But I'm going to be training more. I'm going to be buying less things. I'm cleaning out closets, and, you know, we have like cribs in the storage area and stuff that we don't need. So, I am really focused on simplification this year. I feel really good when I clean. Like, do you feel that way? Like when you spring clean and when you
cleaned my 5-year-old's bedroom today and like threw out a bag of garbage and a bag of recycling, and it was glorious.
It feels so great to do that. So that's what I'm going to basically spend my year doing.
You're going to spend a year doing spring cleaning.
Yeah.
I may or may not fantasize about some need to move down to a 2-bedroom apartment and having to completely shed like 90% of our stuff in order to fit.
Yeah. Russ
may or may not.
Russ said that when he moved to Florida, like they got rid of Russ from the Domestic Man, our mutual friend, that they got rid of a bunch of stuff. And it was like really nice for him to just like do that, because it was part of the packing process. So I'm essentially treating this year as though we were moving. That's my thought process behind it, is like, okay, if I was moving, would I keep this? And I'm just going from closet to room to room to room. The kitchen is going to take a long time, because I'll do like one cabinet at a time. We've got a lot of stuff, but that's my goal.
That's funny, because that's actually what I started doing, that like randomly, like once a week when I finished the Paleo Approach cookbook. And I've been like, I've probably done a quarter of the number of corners I actually want to do. Like there's still, and then I'll go back and start all over again. But I'm totally on that. As I mentioned, I think I have 9 New Year's resolutions last time I checked, but they actually all have the common theme, which is really putting my own physical health and mental health first this year. And I think, you know, I've learned some really important lessons about writing books and blogging and, you know, doing, you know, being a thought leader and all of these great, amazing things. But I've learned a lot of lessons about the toll that they take on me personally. And I've been really strategizing ways to make sure that I'm still doing all of these things that I want to do that are helping to educate people about what is actually healthy and bring science into the conversation. I think I'm just so passionate about that. But at the same time, also really make sure that I'm, walking every day and getting to CrossFit and going to bed at a good time and meditating and just really looking after myself, taking time to enjoy my accomplishments instead of being so goal focused that I don't take the time to appreciate what I have done. And so I'm really focusing on, you know, both physical and mental health. And one of the top big resolutions that I'm going to be doing as part of that is actually doing 10,000 steps. And I've realized in counting my steps lately, I'm nowhere near 10,000. Like even when I work at my treadmill desk for a couple of hours, 10,000 steps is actually like 5 miles. So I was like, 5 miles? Okay, I need to clearly step this up a notch. So that is going to be one of my big goals. And I've actually ordered myself a Fitbit to track both that and sleep and make sure that my sleep is on track as well, since that's another big part of my New Year's resolutions. I was shocked. I figured, of course, I did 10,000 steps. No, I do like 3,000 or 4,000. Like I'm really falling short. And I didn't realize I was falling so short. So that's going to be a big resolution for me this year. And I think a lot of that's going to be spending more time working at my treadmill desk and not finding so many excuses to work elsewhere, but also, you know, really taking time to go for a walk, you know, take my kids to the playground and do those sorts of things, I think is going to be major, major contributors to that. So walking is a major, major New Year's resolution for me this year.
I think that's a good goal. I too was very surprised when I first put on a walking device that I was so low, because I stood at my standing desk at work and I assumed I was getting steps for that, but there's no credit for standing.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I specifically had to get the Fitbit that's like the old style, that's not a wristband, because I work at a treadmill desk, which means my legs are moving, but my hands aren't because I'm typing. So I specifically got the one that goes on a waistband during the day, but then fits into a wristband for sleeping. So I think it's supposed to come tomorrow. Yeah. I ordered it off Amazon. So I think it's supposed to come tomorrow. So I'm really excited to try it out and see where I'm at with a more accurate device. So then maybe I'll be all like Fitbit enthusiast for the next little while.
Cool.
I'll bring it on tour. I'll be telling you how many steps we're doing.
Or how many I'm not doing. Awesome. Well, I hope everyone has had a wonderful holidays and welcome to 2015. I'm excited. I'm really, really excited for the new year, clean start. And I hope all of you are feeling fresh and ready to have a wonderful year as well.
Happy New Year, everyone, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I should call you a crazy cat lady now. Is three cats enough to be a crazy cat lady?
I hope not. I have three kids. That's one too many for sure. So, but I mean, I've got
one too many kids.
Yeah. I've got to balance it out with cats.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying that you should never have more kids than hands.
I know, but Matt and I have four hands, so right.
That's true. I've also heard people say you shouldn't be outnumbered by your kids. So I guess that meant that the only way to have more than two kids was to have polygamous relationships, which I'm pretty sure they were not endorsing. I don't see three as being crazy cat lady threshold.
Awesome.
Like five, maybe. Maybe five.
I think I'm going to name my cat Garfunkel. Is that weird?
I named mine Tilly because of Tilly hats, and she's a Tilly cat. So how can you get dorkier than that?